So I'm going to introduce our next speaker. And I just want to start out by saying we would not be where we are with this initiative, and I dare I say in the whole country, without you, Connie. No, really, because you really had the foresight to support this right from the beginning. And so let me tell you who Connie is. She served as the Chief of Health Policy for Maternal, Child, and Adolescent Health in the California Department of Public Health, and now serves as the Chief of Health Policy for California's new Office of Health Equity. Her expertise is in collaborative planning. Collaborative, that is the word, and implementation across agencies, businesses, interest groups, and community-based organizations with a focus on vulnerable populations and social determinants of health. You are truly a pioneer in public health, Connie. I welcome you up here to the podium.
Well, you're really nice, but it's half true. And that's the way that it is first of all, you have to have people to work with, whether it's they actually contribute work or they contribute funding. But most of all, you have to have trust. And that's the principal discussion that I want to give here, is how do you build these trusting relationships, these private-public partnerships, so that you can proceed ahead and feel like everybody gets credit where credit is due, everybody gets to join the train as the train moves down the track. And that's really essential. And this trusting relationship that the state of California built with the March of Dimes was one that I'll always treasure. So thank you very much. So I need to, I didn't realize these were animated. I'm going to have a busy finger here. we also got permission. You have to get permission to expend your Title V money, and so the director of our Title V director, Shabir Ahmad, allowed us to make some designations for Title V to do some experimental projects, and I'll tell you more about those. And Catherine Camacho, the director of the Center for Family Health, we used our Title V money not only for this project, but we also used it to fund the California Maternal Quality Care Collaborative at Stanford and San Bernardino County, the MMLIP project. I'll talk about that. It's a maternal health project at the local level, and then the March of Dimes for their partnership and leadership on this. So I'm going to talk to you about the data that prompted us to look at elective delivery rates, some of our state strategies, and then more detail about this partnership with March of Dimes. So you saw another gestational curve. This was the gestational curve in California, singleton deliveries in 2010. And you can see that the spike set, 38, 39, 40 weeks. But then we wanted to go back and see how this compared. And so this is a little different representation than Becky had. This is showing how you either above the line is a percent change in the distribution from 1990 to 2010, or a decline. And so this assumption when you look at these curves is that you think, well, maybe it's shifting from the right side into the center or the left side, but you don't exactly know. It's sometimes hard to say, so you can do some comparisons that were done. But it looked like the most of the shift in our 38 and 37 was coming from 39 and 40 weeks. We got a few in the 37 weeks where the shift was coming from the lower side, from the left side of the chart. So we were worried that there was this shift in this. I think, as a physician, I understand. I mean, I've delivered babies. I've been really frightened. In fact, the field that I wanted to go into when I graduated from medical school was obstetrics and gynecology. But then my first delivery, I realized I was frightened the whole time. That I didn't find that to be a very exciting, exhilarating experience. I found it to be very frightening. So I understand the physicians when, they're nervous and moms are nervous, and I was a mother, and I remember just saying that, that this baby with my huge abdomen was only millimeters away from being out, and I wanted it out. And I remember I called my doctor every day the last week and used every medical persuasion I could think of, which was like, oh, the baby's not moving as much, the kick count is low. And he would say, calm down, there's no reason for you to not go into labor when you're meant to go into labor. And luckily I had a doctor, even with a crazy doctor for a patient, who was able to just be patient. And sure enough, within a few days I went into labor and had a great outcome. But I understand that anxiety on both sides, and so I don't think there's any reason to point fingers on either side. It's anxiety. Everybody wants a healthy baby. And so I think that for a long time people thought doing inductions was the way to get that baby out and get it into the mother's arms as quick as possible and relieve some of this. But we started to see that not only some of the neonatal health outcomes, but we were a little bit worried about our cesarean section rate maybe attributed to this. And then as we studied maternal mortality, we're a little bit worried that induction seemed to be associated with some of our rates of like amniotic fluid embolisms. And then once you have one cesarean section, then you have a risk for a second one, and then that second one seemed to have all the problems with hemorrhage. And so our rise in morbidity due to obstetric hemorrhage was going up. So we had a lot of motivation to take this project on from both the neonatal and the maternal side. And here's our delivery type data in California showing that our rates of vaginal deliveries were declining over the same time period. Our cesarean sections were rising, and you can see that both the repeat and the primaries were both going up. And unfortunately, our VBAC rates were practically zero. And then this is our maternal mortality rates in California. We were very alarmed at how they were continuing to rise over this time period. In 2002 and 2003 is when we started our maternal mortality project. And so you can see there's in this last 3-year period that I have data for, it looks like we're maybe having some impact, but then at the same time there was the recession and the drop in our birth rate, and so we don't know what impact economics and maybe changes in your demographics in your state has, and so that's something that we've got to follow. So one of the first things we did was to offer up to our locals a project, the opportunity to have a project to address maternal health. We used Title V money. We put out an RFA for any project that you thought, based upon your local data, that you could justify that would improve maternal health. We were able to fund 4 counties. One of the counties that were selected was San Bernardino, and their project was to reduce elective induction. They didn't target initially the 37 and 38 weekers. They just wanted to reduce all elective inductions. They began that project really working with local leadership, bringing in hospitals. It was the first time that a county health department tried to influence practice within a hospital setting. They were nervous about that. They didn't know how to do that. And I, having been on both sides, did a lot of hand-holding with them to say, this is okay. You can encourage them. In fact, they may really appreciate it that the public health department, who's not in their competitive domain, but is bringing up, here's the data that we have. This is an issue. We want to help you. We'll provide some technical assistance. And so then they pursued ahead. And they were one of the greatest outcomes of that is they now know each of their hospitals. They now know they have contacts there. They're looking to take on another quality improvement project. So that was an outcome that we hadn't anticipated, but they're just thrilled about. So they started to meet with their each of their hospitals. Initially, they only had 7 or 8 hospitals that signed up, and it was interesting, the physician responses at those hospitals where, if you make me do this, I'll go to another hospital. So the public health department went out and recruited the rest of the hospitals in the county so that it made relocation or, you know, going to a different hospital a little bit harder to do. You had to travel a little bit further. So once they got, and the hospitals liked that because then some of their anxiety started to disappear. We had to reassure them that none of the data was going to be coming to the state by individual hospitals. I went to one meeting and then I told them I was going to disappear. I didn't want them to think that I, as a state public health officer, was somehow monitoring individual hospitals, that I wanted to see the aggregate data. So it took a lot of reassurance for this partnership to occur, but they were able to do so. So they had advisory bodies and they recruited all the major birthing facilities. They started to collect data, and then, just as was described by Becky, as you collected the data, you gave feedback to the hospitals, and they could see where they compared to the other hospitals. And then if they were struggling, you provided some technical assistance around, you know, whatever the issue was. So that's like a kind of a PDSA cycle for quality improvement. So we call this a quality improvement effort. And in fact, San Bernardino is presenting later this week on their quality improvement effort. If you want more details on the challenges that they faced and how they overcame those, you should go. So their major accomplishments was persistent engagement of the county public health department with 13 of 15 hospitals. Two of the hospitals would join the phone calls, and they were interested in the educational sessions, but they did not submit data. And it was for completely different reasons, mostly about hospital resources. They developed their own local resource materials, their induction criteria, and induction, a basic induction toolkit, some patient education. They went into all of their birthing classes and talked to the women because of the data that Leslie shared with you. They thought it was really important for women to know that, it seems like, 4 times 9 equals 36, but no, 4 times 9 equals 40. We have new math, but women didn't know that. And that makes sense why they wouldn't know that, because of the way that we've kind of done this math and how we calculate it. So here's just one glimpse of their outcome data. The top line is showing inductions overall less than 39 weeks on a gradual decline. And then the middle line is inductions for medical reasons, and that's similar to what Becky was saying, is you wanted to make sure that either that wasn't going up or that wasn't changing, but that line remained relatively constant. And then the bottom one in the blue, the elective inductions during the overall decline, is the elective inductions are driving the overall decline, and that was what was important. And statistically, these declines are all statistically significant, except for the medical induction that stayed the same. There was no change there. So the other project that we worked on was the CMQCC, the California Maternal Quality Care Collaborative. And so this organization, looking at our rising morbidity and mortality, maternal morbidity and mortality in California, we needed to start to address that. And we really thought there was a lot of opportunity in obstetric care, that there was opportunity for quality improvement. And we had a group that was collecting data on morbidity, maternal morbidity in California, and then we also had a pregnancy-associated mortality review team so that we could not only understand in more detail, we pulled medical records of every woman who died and reviewed those records, and then had a committee that would try to evaluate, the causes of death, and then not only that, but the opportunities for intervention, and characterize them as to which of these were opportunities for quality improvement that then could be translated. So what CMQCC does is they collect the data, they do we have the quality improvement opportunities identified, and then those are translated into toolkits that then can be used to improve maternity care. And so within this, so I've got these two things going on. I've got the local San Bernardino project doing something that looks like it's really exciting. I've got a structure set up so that I have this well-established maternal quality care collaborative. And then Leslie comes on the scene and she said, we have this project that we want to do too, and how might we make it work? And so we just started to just talk about it and say, well, why don't we redirect some of this money at CMQCC and do it towards the toolkit? And because we already have funding to do that, and there are already, and we have some initial data from San Bernardino, we can kind of roll it into it. And then she said, well, then we could help, and we could participate so that you only have so much money, but we can contribute some resources to make that toolkit look really great, and then we'd like to take it and go nationally. And I said, well, that would be great. So now we have a contract. We have kind of a pilot site in San Bernardino where we're learning what some of these challenges are. And then we have a contract with Stanford to develop a toolkit, and we had a license agreement with March of Dimes so that we could take that and then they could just go with it. Because they not only contributed to making it higher quality overall, but then they were able to package it and disseminate it in ways that we could not do at all. We would not have it. So that's the point of this whole discussion, is seeing your opportunities, and then I call it a snowball effect, kind of wrapping them together, and so it becomes, something greater than yourself, and you give it life and you give it birth. I mean, that's the only way the metaphor that I think is the best. So you've already kind of heard about the toolkit and how it came about, but I want to talk about what's happening today, because that's always, okay, you had those great projects, so now what's going on? Well, in California, we have about 350 hospitals who deliver in our state, with over 500,000 births a year. So right there is a very daunting challenge, and we had the pilot project that was in San Bernardino, And then people just started picking up on it. So March of Dimes had some sites that they did in California, so word of mouth got around on that. And then the California Hospital Association got some funding for a patient safety initiative from Anthem Blue Cross, and they chose ending elective deliveries as one of their projects. So now you have another influx of substantial money to do that project. And we had other partners who started to gradually come on board, whether it was, you know, Pacific Business Group on Health or the whole, we had a steering committee with CMQCC. And everybody started to say, you know, we want to participate in this. And then I suddenly realized, I think Leslie did too, is like, I have no idea what's going on in my state. Like, the question came to me, like, how many hospitals are doing this work and where are they in their progress? So then I said, okay, we've got to try to do an environmental scan. And so we looked at four things, and we have our regional perinatal programs of California, RPPC, where they have hospitals that are assigned to each region. I went to my RPPC coordinators and I said, find out what's going on in these hospitals. March of Dimes had some contacts. I said, find out what's going on in these hospitals. Anthem Blue Cross had contacts. Blue Cross actually did a survey too. And then we compiled all of our data into like this qualitative data set. Are they engaged? Has hospital leadership identified this as an issue? Have they made policy changes, including a hard stop yet, in their institution? Are they doing data collection and quality improvement efforts on a regular basis? And have they tried to create a patient education program? And so the last scan that was done, it looked like all of our hospitals were engaged in some way or another. It looked like around 30 to 40%, it might be that high right now, had actually started to make policy change. And it was the lower number, around 30%, that were instituting hard stops. They were all attempting data collection, but those that were using it on a regular basis and really collecting it in a vigilant manner was still only around 30%, and about 25% had done a patient education initiative. So we still have a long way to go in California, but there's a huge momentum, a lot of people that are excited about this, and I hope that it's all good news down the road. I just want to say one thing about the data center. How's my time, am I?
About 2 minutes.
Okay. The California Maternal Data Center at CMQCC at Stanford has, we gave a little bit of seed money, and then they got a grant with CDC to build this database, and then they got some additional foundation funding. What they're trying to do is look at this measure and collect real-time data from hospitals. So that they get the birth data, they get an expedited birth certificate direct from our vital records. They get discharge data from our patient data discharge file. They get it directly from the hospital. So when the hospitals submit it to the state, they submit it to CMQCC at the same time. So now you cannot do quality improvement if you have data that's 2 years old, period. So they had to figure out, how can we get more real-time data so that we can give immediate feedback to the hospitals? If it's 2 years old, the hospital will say, oh, we changed everything, we're fine, you know, that's not our issue anymore. But with real data, you say, oh, no, you haven't changed, unless you changed in the last week. So they are setting up this data portal. Hospitals sign up to join it, and then that's too small, I realize, for you to see. But the hospital, similar to Becky was saying, is that they will get the data on their hospitals. They'll know how they compare. They'll be able to use this as part of a joint commission measure if they're interested in doing that. And right now they've been they're in the process of recruiting. They have enough initial funding that they should be able to recruit almost 50% of the hospitals in California and pay for that initial. Hospitals won't have to pay to join or pay for their data. We have lots of ongoing collaborations with March of Dimes, so this partnership is one of many. And I think I would say the key is just flat out up front. Here's our issues, here's our needs, here's what we need to go forward, and vice versa. And Leslie and I had those conversations, and then we brought in the attorneys and they had their conversations. But I think the foundational was, this is what we need as the state, and this is what would make us feel comfortable with this. And Leslie said the exact same thing back to me. This is what March of Dimes needs. And we found a way that everybody felt like this was a complete win-win, that there were co-benefits and we were excited to be on board. So the final slide, lessons learned. You can use your Title V funding to seed ideas. Look for opportunities to snowball the impact by diversifying your partners and your funding resources. Share credit, honor your partners, embrace new collaborators wherever possible. Create win-win scenarios and formalize agreements so that there's no misunderstanding as the products come out. I had one line I said to Leslie over and over again. I said, nobody wants a crappy product. Everybody wants to get on board if it looks good. So you need to up front really establish your parameters and who's your contributors and what your face sheet looks like and how big are the logos and all that kind of stuff. And then my final thing is keep your eye on the prize and continue to negotiate a path forward. There's been lots of things that would come up. Some are little and some are big, but you always just say, okay, how can we get through this? Let's talk about it and let's move on to the next thing. And that's it. Thank you.